Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. We're streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and iTunes and all over the places. Check us out on the web. I am Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. Our guest today is Greg Rush. Greg is the owner of Buy a Vet, and you can find them online at buyavet.com. A very interesting business. Greg, welcome to Driven to Business.
Well, thank you very much, Eddie. Glad to be here.
Greg, I was thinking on the way in the studio today that having just bought a vet from you, you know, you really are in the entertainment business. I was thinking about that on the way in here because it's very entertaining to drive what you sell.
That's so true. It's fulfilling dreams. And people that graduated from high school, typically they know what they wanted at that age, but they couldn't justify buying it, got married, had children. But they come in and say, you know, when my kids get out of college, I'm going to buy a Corvette. So when they do, it's fulfilling that dream that they've had since high school.
Well, I'm slow on the uptake because my kids have been out of college a long time. But nonetheless, we finally did get around to it. Greg, Buy a Vet, for many guys, would be considered a dream business to be in. So tell us how you got started in that.
Well, I was in the consumer electronics business before. I owned a manufacturer's rep firm selling brands, well-known brands, to places like Macy's, Rich's, Hi-Fi Buys, when the department stores were in the electronics business. And then just one morning I woke up and I said, geez, that's been fun. I've had my fun with that. It's time to get into something that I've always loved and had the passion for, and that's Corvettes. And actually, while I was in high school, I leased a gas station and operated it for 2 years, riding a bicycle from high school to the gas station, because the local police knew me very well, and of course, afraid to drive. But anyway, I got the oil in my system on my hands, and from that point, all my life, I just love cars, and Corvettes was a natural.
No, that's interesting. I worked in a gas station when I was in high school, changing oil and all that stuff. But you know, interesting enough, I didn't know that. You just told me that. My dad actually ended up spending his career as a Baptist preacher. In fact, just retired not too long ago. But Dad, in high school, this was during World War II, Dad in high school started an automotive repair business with another much older guy, as a matter of fact, and they were quite successful at it and ran that, as a matter of fact, until they sold it to someone else, which is just interesting. I did not do that in high school. I wasn't that entrepreneurial, I guess.
Well, I guess I've had it in my blood since I got a wheelbarrow and some free paint some lady threw away. I helped her clean out my garage and decided to go around the neighborhood and paint mailboxes for 25 cents. And at 8 years old, it turned out to be a successful business. So I guess it sticks with you. Once you have a pocket full of quarters, then you try to figure out something else to do.
Hey, painting mailboxes one day, selling Corvettes the next. I mean, that's a good idea. Hey, you and I have talked about this a little bit, but I think people that buy a Corvette, and you'd already alluded to this a little bit, are probably in some ways from the same demographic as people that buy a Harley. Am I right about that?
There is a lot of crossover, and if one understands the bulk of motorcycle riders, they are adult. They're not the Hells Angels. It's entirely different. I would have to say high percentage of them are, during the week, they're business people, but they just love to get on a motorcycle and head to the mountains. And to somewhat, that's parallels a Corvette owner. However, there's different segments of a Corvette owner. Some people buy them strictly for investment, but also love to go out and look at them in the garage, but rarely take them out. There's others who use them for weekend drivers. And then there's a group that actually drives them every day to and from work and then has their fun in the mountains. So it's kind of broken down in three segments.
You know, I actually, one of the things I was a little, I don't guess I was surprised by, but at least it struck me. You know, you can look at, you can go to your business, which, by the way, is right at the intersection of 85 and 285 for those of you here in the Atlanta area. And there's a big Corvette sticking up in the air. You really can't miss it. If you're going north, it's on your left there. You know, you can find a used Corvette in there, let's say, that's, you know, a 2005, 2004, something like that. And when you go to look at the miles on it, it's only got 25, 30,000 miles, which is so different than what it would be if that were a Chevy Nova, the number of miles it would be on that thing. So I guess, is it just that people do park them a lot and only drive, your average person just drives them for like for a recreational fun type vehicle? Is that the deal?
I would say a majority of the owners of Corvettes use them as weekend cruisers, but there are some that do have higher mileage. But then again, we search the entire Southeast to find the lowest mile Corvettes in the best condition. That's sort of what we've been known for the last 25 years, and that's the type of product that I enjoy the best passing on.
I was going to talk to you about that a little later on in a later segment, but you guys really do have an enormous presence on the internet and also in your business. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that. I would think that the buying is a very big part of your business success. I'll talk about the nuts and bolts of the business. Let me ask you this though. First of all, again, and I don't want to overplay the Harley angle here, but it's something I've been thinking about. At least in my mind, the General Motors brand in recent years, for a variety of reasons, has kind of been a bit of a tarnished brand. You're going to find Chevrolet people get mad at me for saying that, but I think it'll minimize of a lot of us. However, the Corvette brand is a very strong brand, not only here, but even in Europe. And again, I sort of tie that to the Harley idea. I have friends that were buying Harleys back when the joke was you bought a Harley and you also bought a piece of cardboard to put under it in your garage when you got home because it's going to be leaking oil. But they still, that brand stayed strong. Why is that? Why do brands just go like that? What is that?
That's a difficult question. I don't know if I can really answer it. There's no doubt about it that a Corvette, the makeup of a Corvette coming out in 1953 when they made only 300 that year, and you had a choice of white with red interior, white with red, and then white with red. They were all exactly the same. But in following that, it has always been a two-passenger sports car through all the years. Well, the other manufacturers, such as Ford, they started out with the Thunderbird, and it was a
right
two-seat, and then they evolved into a more of a luxury full-size. I think the T-Bird topped out at, what, 18 feet long?
Yeah.
So the Corvette has always been what it is. Interesting that the story goes they did not want to invest in the Corvette because they weren't too sure, so they made the first one out of fiberglass. Well, believe it or not, every single Corvette ever made was fiberglass, with the exception Alcoa actually built two Corvettes made out of aluminum, or they rebodied them in aluminum and approached GM and said, why don't you switch over to aluminum? Well, that didn't fly, but they've been fiberglass ever since, and that's a lightweight, strong product, and got to tell you, they are doing such an exceptional good job over the last few years winning races. In fact, I understand just recently, this weekend at Petit Le Mans, they actually required Corvettes to be detuned, and they added extra weight because they knew that the Corvettes were going to win. So they're trying to even up the playing field and bringing down the power and adding weight to a Corvette. In fact, we were leading the race until a Corvette piled up with a Ferrari, and I believe, can't remember the other car right this second, but there was a pileup. So that knocked out first place. So we won, I think, third and fifth.
Wow, way to go. All right. Hey, I think a casual observer of your business, just someone listening to you talk, would think, wow, he sells and restores Corvettes. That's really cool. But there's a lot more than just being cool and doing it. You alluded to it already. It's in the buying and in a lot more things to, you know, you get these in and you have a beautiful showroom and the vets there look beautiful. Can you just give us a little walk through what you guys do when you get a vet in?
We put it through what has turned out to be almost an overkill, but we don't feel so. It's over 320 items that we check. That's the power mirrors all the way down to, of course, the safety issues like taillights, headlights, horn, but also go through and check out the engine, transmission, and rear end to make sure they're in excellent working condition. As a result, we give all of our Corvettes a 2-year warranty, which is unheard of for a used vehicle. And that's free of charge, Eddie. So with the process of changing the fluids and any belts or anything else look a little bit worn, we change those too. But on the purchasing side, it is a challenge. I don't have the luxury of calling up the manufacturer and asking for a delivery for another 20 to 50 vehicles.
Used cars. That's right. Can you give me some more used cars?
Yeah, you know, and on top of that, it brings me up to another point of humor. We have customers coming in and saying, if you could only find me this 1967 with this option and under this color.
Right.
And all that. And I said, well, let me see if I can fill out an order form and send it into General Motors to see if I can find it. There was so few made originally, and then when you narrow it down, how many are still on the road and in excellent condition and for sale? We really work hard, and it's the years of contacts that we have made in the industry, whether it's a dealership, whether it's in Augusta, Georgia, or Charlotte, that is contemplating trading in a vehicle. And if it's a Corvette, we get the phone call because they want us to advise them on the trade-in, and then ultimately we end up with the trade if it's a real nice Corvette.
When you and I were talking before about this, I was actually thinking about that because your business really does depend on relationships, not only the relationships with customers, but also the fact that you have relationships with people around the country who have access or at least have an eye out for these Corvettes that meet your criteria that you can then get. So you have product to sell to the people, the customers that you're building relationships with. More to come. This morning we're talking with Greg Rush with Buy a Vet. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Greg Rush with Buy a Vet. Greg, I'm in a niche business myself. We sell electronic motor drives, as we have discussed. And in fact, I've spent my entire life in a niche business. I've never really worked for a large company. I was even in a small branch of the service. I was in the Coast Guard. So even my whole life has been around small business, small organizations, and people that worked in certain niches. Now, Buy a Vet is certainly a niche business. If we can kind of pull, sort of take a 10,000-foot view of it for a minute, talk to us about the challenges and the opportunities, because you have other business interests as well. Talk to us about the challenges and opportunities of running a niche business as opposed to perhaps running a business where you're selling toothpaste or something like that.
Well, Eddie, it was a lot of fun talking to you about the product that you're involved with, the variable speed high-powered engines. I just always fascinated with the mechanics. However, when it comes to running a small business, the word today spreads so fast with the internet. When I started the business 25 years ago, we were advertising in the local auto trader. They would come out, take pictures of the vehicles. We'd write a little copy, and up it goes. Today, we're appealing really to the world. It's not uncommon that if you stop in, somebody's there from Germany,
right,
Australia, Sweden, Norway. In fact, we even have Jan, who is one of the salespeople who speaks 4 or 5 European languages. And
Jan is the guy that I dealt with. He is a sharp guy, very sharp guy, very, very skilled.
Very pleasant to work with, too,
right,
by the way. And with that, we get phone calls, emails from everywhere. And if I had to build a model to have as large a Corvette dealership as this is, catering only to people in Georgia,
right,
I would relook at the business plan.
Yeah, you're right.
But the advent of the website for anybody to go on, and you know, you've been on our website. We have many pictures, very close-ups of different parts, interior, exterior, underneath, motor compartment. But at the same time, many of them have got live videos done by the salespeople.
Right.
And that's even on test drives. For somebody that lives in Chicago, snow's on the ground, they flip on it, maybe on their break while working for a big corporation, and say, geez, that's what I'm looking for. That's the color. That's the six speed. That's just exactly what I want. Bam, we get a phone call and start the conversation, and it sometimes results in a sale. So it's quite changed. It's changed an awful lot over the years.
I know from my own experience, and I was telling Isaac before you got here, our producer here, that you cannot look for a Corvette on the internet and not have it's buyavet.net. Is that correct? Am I saying that right?
That's correct. It's BUYAVETTE. And you can go to .net or .com.
Okay. You got them both. All right.
Right.
But you cannot really search for a Corvette and not find you. I had been looking for some time and had been on your site a number of times. It's just unavoidable. And also, once you do get to your site, it is a very, very user-friendly, and if you're interested in vets, it's kind of a fun site to be on because you get to look at a lot of vets, you know. So it's kind of a fun site, like you said, and you can click on the videos and actually see a salesman doing a walk around the car and put you inside the car and all that. It's really a fun thing about that. So I would encourage anyone looking for a vet to go to buyavet.net or as Greg said, buyavet.com and check that out. You know, in our business, the internet, again, it's amazing. And like you, back when we started our business, you know, 25 years ago, I guess there was an internet, but I didn't know much about it. If there was, almost no one did. And I could not have predicted how much of our business now comes off the internet. As I'm sure you feel the same way. It's changed the way we do and look at business. And it's really wonderful in a way. It opens up opportunities we never would have had before.
That's so true. And Eddie, I'd have to give some advice maybe to other listeners. So often we are approached by this list of emails or do this,
right,
blast
right.
outs and all that kind of stuff. You know, everybody's doing that, but that's not the key. The key is to have the information about your product as best you can portray it, put it on the website, and people find you. This simple search, it's not all the blasts, because I don't know how many blasts we're getting. What, between me and the salesman, I know I'm getting 150 junk emails a day, and it's getting worse every single day. And you know, all these people that think, you know, buy another list to blast out, that's going to get them more business. It's not. Concentrate on your website by not making it pretty or the functionality so much. Just display the product that you have, talk about it. And I think that means so much to somebody that's a prospective buyer.
It's interesting you should say that. I've had many arguments with people. I've had several websites designed and I've gotten in this argument with almost everybody that's ever designed one. And I've been involved with ours at church and a few things. I've had this argument there with people. You know, you get the graphic designer types that are very interested in the beauty of it. And there is something to that. I'm not knocking it. But, you know, I'm more of the engineering type. I know what I'm looking for when I go to a site. I want information. That's what I want is information. That's what I'm looking for. If it's presented in a pretty fashion, great. If it's not, I still want the information first so I can find it. And you're exactly right. You got to think about why are people coming to your site. Be sure they find what they're looking for. And you know, the we do some internet, some email. Most of it is my own lists, and I'm always, Greg, torn between how often is spam and how little is not doing enough. And we have that argument all the time in our company because, you know, spam, spam's in the eye of the person getting the email. If he thinks it's junk email or spam, then it is. It doesn't matter what you say about it, it is. And so the trick is to be sure, even if you're sending emails, you're sending something the guy actually is interested in instead of just inundating his inbox with stuff he's never going to open and look at. And I don't know if that's any different than junk snail mail we used to do all the time. Yeah, I'm not sure. Because, you know, we used to get, my wife and I still get email, get mail in the house, and it goes straight from the mailbox to the recycle bin. It's never, and I'm sure you do the same thing.
Exactly.
So I think any of us in business have got to just be aware of that. You just got to be sure that you're, number one, sending that mail or email or whatever it is to people that actually are interested. Because if you could find, you know, when I was looking for a vet, had you known Eddie was looking for a vet and you sent me an email saying, we have vets, I'd have probably opened it and looked at it. If you've known that.
I can understand that. But if in a business that not everybody wants a Corvette.
Right.
There's lovers of other vehicles, and to change the mind of a Ford owner who follows Mustangs, I can't switch him over to a Corvette, and really that's not our function.
Right.
But if he wants to jump over the fence and take a test drive or come in and just to look at them or whatever, we're happy to have them in.
You know, I was joking that the program manager here at Biz 1190 is Aaron Williams, and Aaron's a big I didn't know this till last week. He was telling me he's a big Mustang guy, and I was telling him we got a Corvette guy coming in. He said, well, I'll come by and talk to him, but I'm a Mustang guy.
Well, be sure to tell him we will give him a trade.
You'll probably meet him in a little bit.
We have no problem trading in Mustangs.
Hey, in about a minute here, and that's not enough time. We'll talk about it after the break. Let's talk about customer service a little bit. You guys have a great customer service culture. I want to talk about that even after the break. But just start giving us a little bit of hints here in about a minute of how do you start building that? How do you do that?
Well, we offer a money-back guarantee. If somebody buys a Corvette from us and didn't come in, just wants us to ship it to them, take it out and drive it. If you, for any reason, don't want it, send it back to us. We'll give you a full refund. So it starts with tell them up front what we will do for the customer to protect them. If they change their mind, we're behind them.
I think all that goes to honesty and trust. And that has a lot to do. We will talk more about it after the break. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Keep in mind, we're streaming live on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast. If you have someone interested in Corvettes, you ought to get them to listen to it. Go to eddiemayfield.com or find it on iTunes or all over the net. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad that you're here. Talking with Greg Rush with Buy a Vet. You can find Greg at buyavet.net, or she tells me buyavet.com. There will also be links to Greg on eddiemayfield.com. So find him if you're interested in a vet, or if you even think you might be, check him out. It's a beautiful store to go to and walk around in. You'll really enjoy it. You know, Greg, we didn't talk about this earlier, but one of the things that you know, you've got your, obviously, as you know, you've got your sort of lot out front with a bunch of vets, almost a bunch of vets. I don't know how many, but you've got a lot out there. But then you've got I don't know if this is the right term, but you've got sort of a showroom or a nicer, I guess that's the right word, back in the back. And you had some older, like restored vets back there that I was looking at that are just gorgeous. Now they're out of my price range, to be quite frank about it, but they were some older vets that anybody that's interested in a collector item vet like that, that's a different customer, I would think, than somebody like me that just wants to drive one in the mountains.
Well, Eddie, you're really a prospect for both. And it's not uncommon that somebody comes in for one generation of Corvette and then leaves with the other, or either buys one and a few months later comes back and buys one that's 20, 30 years apart. The layout, I'll help you with the layout. The original location is on the west side of I-85 just inside Spaghetti Junction, and we outgrew that space. So I was looking for additional space, and a building became available on the east side of 85. It's almost directly across from this, and that's 25,000 square feet, for which we have 14 racks, multiple mechanics, and it's also an indoor showroom. Now, when someone comes in and they think that they want a 1965, because that's the year they graduated from high school.
Exactly.
Weather in, please, take advantage, drive all-year Corvettes, because that may or may not be what he is looking for his particular use. You know, somebody says, oh, I'd like to turn around and buy a 1966 Corvette, and I've got a place down in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm thinking about driving, using that car to drive down to Florida. And I said, well, that sounds real good, but why don't you take the 66 out for a drive and see if it meets your needs? And, you know, often they come back and they say, you know, I tell you the truth, I really miss that climate control that I have on my car. You know, I forgot how the 66 really drives. I really can't see driving it all the way to Fort Lauderdale, but I can see using it for a few hours driving up to the mountains. So they may go ahead and buy that, or in offering them to drive some of the other ones. Let's say a 2008, 2013, they get in it. Immediately, it's got his and hers climate control. And, of course, most every married guy can identify with the word his and her climate control.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I don't know about you and your wife, but my wife and I have not been at the same temperature in 45 years. She's always saying, turn that thing down. You're freezing me.
I understand completely.
So anyway, with that, and, you know, of course, if it rains and the windows fog up in an older Corvette, well, you're supposed to have your windshield defroster between your legs on the floor. That's the cloth.
The rag that we used to carry.
You're exactly
right.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So anyway, it varies, but that's what's so nice about coming to our place. We're all about Corvettes, so we can answer your questions, test drive different cars. We just love people to come in, and even if they bought a car from us, you know, months ago or haven't, just come in and look, bring your friends with you, and check us out. And it's like traveling through a museum in time. From,
you know, I was going to talk to you, add more questions about customer service, but actually what you just described, I think, is in fact customer service, where when you get a guy in there and you're actually trying to make his experience good for him, whether he is leaving there with the car he actually wants instead of the one he may have come in thinking that he wanted.
I think that's where customer service begins. It didn't answer your question directly, but certainly that's where it begins, is introducing him to all year Corvettes. And of course, if he wants something changed on his Corvette, we've had people come in many times and say, you know, I would buy that car if it had air conditioning. Well, that's not a problem. There's a company called Vintage Air, and we buy it. It comes in a complete kit, and it installs through the original air vent, so it doesn't look like a big box has been added to
right.
the dash. And actually, it's transparent. So, you know, we can give them what they want. If they want power steering added to it, if they want power brakes, whatever you want. Make the Corvette what you want. Put the creature comforts on there, and then go with that. So we try to cover A to Z.
I'm going back to my original thing I told you earlier in the interview here, is that you're in the entertainment business. People buy Corvettes for fun. That's mainly what you buy them for.
I think so.
And the more fun you make it for somebody, the more, you know, the whole deal with customer service, it's something we in our business have had to, we deal with. And I think anybody that wants to be viable, particularly a small business, it's a great field leveler between you and a large business. The idea you can offer customer service sometimes better than a big company can offer. But it's interesting to me sometimes how different people define good customer service. And I think all of us can define bad customer service. We can all talk about that. But when you ask someone what is good customer service, you get different answers. I'm curious what yours is.
Wow. You're putting me on the spot with that question. Let's go on to another subject there, if you don't mind.
That's fine.
We try our best, and it seems to work, but we're learning every single day of something that we could do better for the customer. And I think that's what's important. We're still learning, and I hope we never quit learning.
There is a your company has it. I can name other companies that have it. Our company has it. There's a culture of customer service, and some of it is nothing more than simple friendliness. When you go somewhere, people are actually nice to you. I mean, that sounds so simple, but we've all had experiences when you walk into a place and nobody says a word to you. You walk into business and it's like you're interrupting their day or something. It's like, what are you people here for exactly? I mean, I'm a customer. And you know, we all find that annoying. And you know as well as I do the old thing that if somebody is happy with something you've done, they will tell a certain number of people, just like they buy a new Corvette, they're going to go around and show it off to some people. But if they have a bad experience, if they feel like they got ripped off by somebody, they're going to tell a lot more people about that. And you're going to get the wrong kind of advertising, whether you like it or not. And the other thing about today's world with the internet, it's not just them and the people they talk to. It's going on their Facebook page. They're going to put it on their Twitter. They're going to, they're going to go to Yelp and all these other reviewing type websites and say horrible things about you. And you're going to go around trying to clean that up. It's a lot easier to do a good job in the beginning. And if a guy's unhappy, take care of him and cut all that off. Greg, you're an interesting guy, an interesting leader. How would you define your leadership style?
I try to hire the best people I can, the best mechanics, the best salespeople. And I'm not looking for a salesperson that is trying to sell you a product. I look for a salesperson that is helpful, attentive to your needs, takes the time, gets the keys, let the customer drive the car, and listen to the customer. Find out what he is interested in buying. Find out how he's going to use it, and then help him select a vehicle that fits his needs. And, you know, if a salesman is trying to sell you something that he wants to sell, a customer will walk away and say, geez, I'll never go back to that place. That guy was just trying to sell me a Corvette that I wasn't interested in, or sell me a lawnmower, whatever type of product it is. The important message that I would have to say is hire salespeople that is interested in the customer's needs and not his needs. And that also goes with service. Listen to the customer, find out what he's really interested in. If he wants to change something on his Corvette or add to it, find out what where he heard about it and why is he wanting to add, let's say, chambered exhaust or manifolds that are different, or cold air intake. What is he trying to achieve by adding these add-on products? So I sort of feel that's the way the success of business is, hiring the right people.
You know, I heard a speech by Ross Perot years ago in Texas.
Yes.
And this is before he got in politics and all this stuff. He just was known as a sort of an affable billionaire back then. He had built his company. And he was talking about customer service. That's one of the things he was talking about. And he was talking about being friendly to customers and how their employees did this, that, and the other. And then he asked for questions. And some guy asked him, said, Mr. Perot, said, how do you train your people to be friendly like that? And he said his typical snappish, like Ross Perot way. He said, why don't you try hiring friendly people to start with? That just doesn't resolve the problem.
he always had to come back for quick, short answers. And honest to gosh, I enjoyed listening to him. One of his favorites was, I'm all ears. Okay, I even use that today. Somebody comes in and they want to ask a question, I just joke around, I'm all ears. He was a colorful person.
But it is easier, like you had mentioned, it is easier to hire a person with a good personality to start with than to try and take some grouch and teach him to have a good personality.
Absolutely.
If you can even do that. I don't know if you can.
Absolutely. And the worst part of it, you can talk about some of the biggest chains in the United States. If a person has a bad experience with one salesperson, then they say, oh, I'm not going to shop at that place anymore. Well, there's another 50,000 employees that work for that company, and their livelihood is invested in that company. And all of a sudden, you're just going to discard the entire chain and never go back to that retailer? because of one person's attitude, that's what you got to avoid.
You know, you had, when you were describing, we were talking about leadership a little bit. I think what you were describing there is when you describe the way you wanted salespeople to be, Greg, I, from my experience with you, you're describing yourself in a way. And so I guess you're it's a sort of a lead by example, because, you know, that the what you had said about don't be selling a person, but try to be, get them what they actually want. Yeah, that's actually what you people feel when they're dealing with you. And I think it is a great idea that you have that. And again, that comes down to culture. You're building a culture in a company, and small businesses can do that pretty well, because, you know, as small business people, we have a great deal of influence in the way that the folks around us do behave and act, and they do tend to emulate us in many ways. That can be good or bad, depending on how what kind of mood we're in when we come in that day. You're listening to Driven to Business. One more segment to go, so stick around. We're talking with Greg Rush with BioVet. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business, talking with Greg Rush with BioVet, located right there inside the perimeter on I-85. You can also find them at BioVet.com or BioVet.net if you're in the mood for a Corvette, or even you just want to go look at some really cool Corvettes. Go by and see them or check them out online. Greg, you're running this Corvette business, but your business career didn't start, nor does it end, with BioVet. I know you've been in some other businesses for a long time. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was in consumer electronics for many years, and that everything from buying at a retail stores to managing a chain of record and stereo stores at the malls to wholesale of consumer electronics. And I say consumer, that's stereos, videos, TVs, to being a manufacturer's representative and having salesmen in the six southeastern states representing different product. Oh. And then I've done some crazy things in my lifetime. I even...
Other than Corvette.
Oh, my gosh, Eddie, that would... There's not enough time to talk about some of the crazy things I've done, but... one extreme, I was actually importing pig ears from Poland because a major pet supply company approached me and asked me if I could find pig ears because they were in such demand for doggy treats. And they put me in touch with somebody that was, I call them barbecue, and actually they were cooking them.
Polish pig ears.
Yeah, Polish pig ears.
That script writes itself there. Yes.
I got to tell you, I got out of that business when a container showed up that somewhere it lost its refrigeration and opened up the back and had stinky pig ears. So, I've been involved in the banking industry.
Are those two related to stinky pig ears?
Yes. So from pig ears to, I don't know, to investment in a local community bank, which is and continues to be quite an education. I'm learning more about the banking industry than I ever wanted to. But I find it challenging. And, of course, anybody that's had experience with community banks over the last number of years, since I say the October 2008, it's been redefined totally.
Now, you and I talked about that a little bit, and this could be a whole program actually. But the banking business has changed and is continuing to change, and you know you have some concerns that the smaller banks are basically being pushed to the side by these consolidations of very, very large banking entities.
Well, I think there's a belief in Washington that we don't need more than 16 banks. You know, the 16 that we saved, you know, where 85% of the deposits are, well, there's only one problem. Have you ever walked into one of the big 16 banks and say, hey, I would like to borrow some money to finance some pig ears being imported? But I have a guaranteed purchase order for those pig ears, or I would like to finance some Corvette inventory or in your products, some of the large 3,000 horsepower electric motors, even though you may have an order from one of the Fortune 50 companies, Delta Airlines, let's say, and that is purchase order would be as good as gold. The big banks would say, well, I don't know who you would talk to, but if you'll fill out this application, we'll get somebody to give you a call. Well, the difference to go to a community bank, they want to learn your business. They want to understand your business. And if it's a viable business plan, they are going to loan you money. And unfortunately, a lot of them have been closed over the years. And without community banks, I'm afraid that what makes up 50% of the economy, small businesses, small meaning up to $50 million, they're going to have a tough time finding banks to work with them.
I cannot agree with you more on that. You know, I think I told you the story about some years ago, we were banking with a much larger bank, and I went in there. I needed to finance some receivables for a short period of time. And the person, and they sent me back to see a person back there, and the person actually told me, and he wasn't saying this to be mean or smart, like he just was being honest, I think. He said, we don't really have a product for a small business like you. And of course, I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? So I left there and went and began banking with smaller banks, which is what I still do. And I very much think that small businesses do, in fact, the small banks do, and this is not to knock the big banks. They do a good job in some ways. But the small businesses do need banks. When you were coming along, you've been in business so long and starting off painting mailboxes, you told us as a kid. Did you have any mentors along the way, particularly that taught you things that or did you just pick it up on your own?
You know, Eddie, 100% I'd say is I picked it up on my own, although I did 10 years of college at night school with a couple of different degrees. I would have to say, sure, everybody should get a college education if they want to be in business for themselves. However, I've had some great people that I have worked with starting off going way back in the late 60s. And those people, I learned a lot from them. And from that information, I took it to another company and applied what I'd learned and also kept my eyes open and my ears open and learned from them. And it's just been accumulation of learning as I went along the path of business.
I don't know about you, and this is a paraphrasing a bit out of the book of Ecclesiastes, but it seems to me like the older that I get, the more it seems like I discover a lot more things that I don't know than I know. And when I was younger, I thought I knew a lot more things than I know now.
I think that's so true. And have you got children?
Yes.
Don't they already know everything that you know and then some?
Of course.
But then it turns around. Right. So I've got two wonderful daughters and two great son-in-laws, and the tide's changing. They come back and say, "One thing, you know, Daddy, you're smarter than I thought you were."
I've been very blessed, and our kids, I get to work with two of our kids, which is really a great, and all of our kids are wonderful and grandkids, and we really do enjoy that. You know, the U.S. has been, in about a minute here, a wonderful place to be in business, especially, I think, small business. You know, I even look at myself and at you and other guys. We've had opportunities to do things that we wouldn't have had to, we probably would not have had those opportunities in a lot of other countries. Do you have any fear that that edge in the United States is going away?
No, actually, I don't. I think, you know, the pendulum swings both ways.
Right.
And it may take a while for it to come back in the other direction, but it seems like it always does work around the mean average. So what we've gone through, some many tough years with the economy. There's always the Monday morning quarterbacking of what we could have done, should have done. Did we do it right? There's even the going back in court, the AIG situation, whether it was right for the government to take over such a huge percentage and charge 14% for money. Well, you know, if you analyze it, it probably saved the economy by going in and do it. So I have to say, though, business, I think, starts from the grassroots. There's a lot of entrepreneurs, and that's where we are with this country, and I certainly enjoy the entrepreneurship.
I am surprising to myself optimistic about business in the country. I saw a panel on Fox News the other day where they were Fox Business, I should say, and they were talking about the rise of the China economy, which has in recent weeks has had some real issues, but. And they were talking about it and talking about it and talking about it in very positive terms. And then the panel moderator asked an interesting question. He said, would any of you move to China? And they all said, heck no. We don't want to live in China. We want to live here. Greg, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you so much.
And again, you can find Greg at buyavet.com. They're right, if you're here in Atlanta, they're right on the, if you head north on I-85, just before you get to the north side of 285, right there on your left, you see a big vet up in the air there. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.